Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Text
44. Anvikshiki trayi varta. Dandani tistatai vacha. Evam vyajitayas chasan. Pranavo hyasya dakrataha. Advikshiki tvayi varta. Danda nitis tatai vacha. Evam vyaritayas chasan. Pranavo hyasya dakrataha. Anvikshiki.
Logic.
Trayi. The three goals, namely religion, economy, and salvation. And economy and salvation. Varta. Sense gratification. Danda. Law and order. Nitihi, moral codes. Tata, as also. Evacha, respectively. Evam, thus. Vyaritayaha, the celebrated hymns Buh, Buvah, and Swah. Cha, also, asan, came into existence, pranavaha, the omkara, he, certainly, asya, of him, Brahma, dakrataha,
from the heart. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The science of logical argument, the Vedic goals of life, and also law and order, moral codes, and the celebrated hymns Buh, Buva, and Swag, all became manifested from the mouths of Brahma, and the Pranava Omkara was manifested from his heart. No commentary. I'll read the following four verses. Tashno shnig asin lomo bio Gayatri cha twacho vibuho Trishtum mamsan shnuto nushtum Jagat yastana prajapateye. Thereafter, the art of literary expression, Ushnik, was generated from the hairs on the body of the Almighty Prajapati. The principal Vedic hymn, Gayatri, was generated from the skin, Trishtup, from the flesh, Anushtup, from the veins, and Jagati, from the bones of the Lord of the living entities. Madhyaya panktir utpanna bihati pranato bhavat. The art of writing verse, pankti, became manifested from the bone marrow, and that of brihati, another type of verse, was generated from the life breath
of the Lord of the living entities.
Sparshas tasya bhavad jiva swaro deha udahitaha ushmanam indriyanyahur antaksta balam atmanaha swara sapta viharena bhavanti sma prajapatehe.
Brahma's soul was manifested as the touch alphabets, his body as the vowels, his senses as the sibilant alphabets, his strength as the intermediate alphabets, and his sensual activities as the seven notes of music. Purport. In Sanskrit, there are 13 vowels and 35 consonants. The vowels are a, a, I, e, u, u, ri, ri, li, a, I, o, au. And the consonants are ka, ka, ga, ga, etc. Among the consonants, the first 25 letters are called the sparshas. There are also four antakstas. Of the ushmans, there are three S's called talavya, murdanya, and dantya. The musical notes are shara, ga, ma, pa, da, and ni. All these sound vibrations are originally called shabda brahma, or spiritual sound. It is said, therefore, that Brahma was created in the Mahakalpa as the incarnation of spiritual sound. The Vedas are spiritual sound, and therefore there is no need of material interpretation for the sound vibration of the Vedic literature. The Vedas should be vibrated as they are, although they are symbolically represented with letters which are known to us materially. In the ultimate issue, there is nothing material because everything has its origin in the spiritual world. The material manifestation is therefore called illusion in the proper sense of the term. For those who are realized souls, there is nothing but spirit. Sound is the most subtle element. Even before the ether comes its tanmatra. What is the purpose of having the elements? So that they can be perceived, so that they can be made use of, enjoyed. So even before the element comes into being, its subtle form of perception precedes it. And then from this tanmatra, the subtle perception, that means sound itself as an abstraction, not any particular sound. That's the tanmatra. Just like the element earth is not anything particular made out of earth. It's just earth, and from earth you make earthy things. So there's a tanmatra. From the subtle form of the sensation come the particular sensations, particular perceptions. The sensation, the tanmatra, comes first. From the tanmatra evolves the physical element. And the first physical element is the akasha, all-accommodating ether. Therefore, the very first element of creation from the Mahatattva, at least from the Mahatattva in ignorance, as far as the concrete creation, the first element is sound, shabda. So we can say in that way that everything is created from sound. Sound comes first. In the Bible, God said, "Let there be light." So by the fiat, or the voice of God, the words of God, the creation occurred. God said, "Let there be creation," and there was creation. We don't have such a thing said in the Bhagavatam, but we do have the description of sound being the first element and everything else evolving from it. And Dennis explained that the Vedic sound is the original sound. That is the spiritual form of sound, is the Vedas. They don't come from any human mouth or any human mind. They're aparusheya, original and eternal. They exist in the spiritual world eternally. And it is on the pattern of the Vedas that the material creation proceeds. The Veda is not just some physical thing. The sound turns into ether, ether turns into this and that. It's not just a physical evolution. It's an evolution of intelligence. It's intelligence that actually is the nimitta karanam of creation. The ingredient cause, upadana karanam, that we can say is pradhan. And then all the, and pradhan evolves into the mahatattva and then all the other physical elements. But that is the ingredient cause. There has to be something that directs, a directing power. That is the nimitta karanam, the active cause. The active cause is the intelligence of the Supreme Person, which manifests in the form of the Vedic sound. The desire, the plan of God is revealed in this world, or it appears in this world in the form of the Vedas. So the Vedas contain the whole plan of creation. They exist before the creation, and the creation is modeled after the Vedas. Therefore, it's explained, Srila Jiva Goswami is quoting in the Sarasambhadini, from the Taittiriya, the Narayana Upanishad, which is contained in the Taittiriya Brahmana, where it's said that because the Vedas are eternal and unchanging, because not one syllable changes, not one intonation ever changes, therefore the creation is always the same. The general, there may be variations, but the general pattern of creation is always the same. The prototype is the same. So therefore, we always have seven rishis, we always have Brahma, the creator, we always have Shiva. They always appear. There are some variations in their differences in their personalities. Sometimes they appear with different aspects of their personalities. They reveal different activities in different days of Brahma. But basically everything's the same. That means that the prototype, the pattern is the same, but then the actual creation may deviate deviate from the plan. Just like performers of a play, they read the script, but sometimes they also improvise. There's a little bit of scope for that. Even the audience who knows the play, they can tolerate when the performers improvise a little bit, not too much. They can tolerate a little. And there's room for improvisation, even besides changing. The words may not be changed, but how they speak the words and how they gesture and move about on the stage, that's their interpretation. That can vary. You can have a very dull performance of Shakespeare, and you can have a brilliant performance, even though speaking the same words. It's how you speak them it makes a difference also. So the script is unchanged. The Vedas are unchanged, but still there's variety in the periodic creation because of some tolerable deviation from the script. And also there's room for interpretation. In other words, the Vedas don't spell out every single moment of everybody's life forever. You know, the general details of what's going to happen are prescribed by the Vedas, and the details, they can be filled in ad hoc, improvised. Just like even in the play, the words are there, they're not supposed to be changed, but then there's a stage direction, you know, a fight on stage. So how the fight proceeds, who hits whom with what, that isn't specified. The performers are free to improvise.
how they're going to fight, or the director of the play decides what the fight's going to look like. It's just a stage direction. Have a fight. So like that, in the Vedas, there are certain stage directions without specifying all the details. So then Brahma and his helpers get to improvise to fill in the details. But all still within the range of faithfully following the Vedic direction. Brahma is qualified. He's Veda Garbha. He has the Vedas in his womb. He's not a lady. He doesn't have a womb. But metaphorically, he's the womb of the Vedas. They're born from him. That means that he's faithful to the Vedas. Otherwise, why would the Vedas choose him as their mother? Krishna chooses Nanda and Yashoda, Vasudeva and Devaki, to be his parents because they're faithful devotees. He chooses them on their spiritual qualification, their qualification of faithfulness and dedication. They're fully dedicated to Krishna. So Brahma is fully dedicated to the Vedas. He's a great student of the Vedas. Bhagavan Brahma Kartsnyena Triran Viksha Manishaya Taradya Vasat Kutasto Atman Ratiryato Bhavet. Brahma, after he created the Vedas, he also studied them. He didn't just spit them out of his mouth and then forget about them. He sat down and studied them. Three times he studied all the Vedas, all the Shrutis. Triyadan Viksha, Manisha, and he applied his intelligence to really trying to understand what they were saying. If you want to study a Shastra properly, you should read it three times and think about it carefully. And the third time you've read it, you might understand it. He didn't have a teacher to help him, so he was doing it on his own. He tried to do it very carefully. Taradya Vasyat, and then he was able to conclude what actually will give pleasure to the soul. Atmaratiriyato bhavet. What is the real object of attraction for the heart? That he discovered by reading the Vedas three times. Atmaratir. You must be a liberated soul to be able to experience atmarati, attraction to the self. Because we're attracted, in our unliberated condition, we're attracted to anatma, everything else but the atma. Body, other people's bodies, other people's money, other people's land. That's what we're attracted to. Conquest and exploitation. That's anatmarati. So it's only the liberated souls who can experience atmarati, attraction to the self. And then there's a higher sense of atmarati, understanding atma to be the paramatma, attraction to the supreme soul, that only the most fortunate, qualified persons know what that is. But it's said that Brahma, just by studying the Vedas as carefully as he did, so thoroughly, three times, he attained atmarati. He understood what atmarati is, or where to get atmarati. To understand how to get something, you must know what it is, first of all. Yeah, I need to get a certain electronic component. Before I can know where to get it, I need to know what it is. If I don't know what a capacitor is, how am I going to find one? So someone has to explain to me, it's one of these big fat blue things. And then I can start answering the question where to locate one. So Brahma is able to locate, know where to find the source of atmarati, means that first of all he knew what atmarati is, what attraction to the self is. He became self-realized, in other words. Maybe not fully Krishna conscious. Atmarati is an ambiguous term. But at least he became self-realized. He realized himself as spirit. Just by studying the Vedas. Three times. So the Vedas contain the key to transcendental knowledge. Not easily found. It's confidential. It's covered over by so many enticements. If you want something material, the Vedas will offer you that material thing first. you won't find the essence if you're interested in anatma rati. Then the Vedas can give you anatma in so many forms. Vedeshu durlabhama durlabhama atma bhakto. Actually, it's very difficult to find Krishna in the pages of the Vedas. If you've dedicated your soul to his devotional service, your life to his devotional service, then the Vedas will help you find Krishna. But if you're still interested in material things, then the Vedas will direct you to what you want. Desire tree. So it matters what you desire. You approach a desire tree with material desires, you'll get material fruits. Who was it? King Midas had his Midas stone. Anything he touched turned to gold, but his desire wasn't pure. What happened? He turned his own wife and children into gold or something. Yeah, he got into trouble because he didn't have his senses under control. He got something that would fulfill his desires, but his desires were out of control, so therefore he suffered. Vrikasura got his benediction and killed himself. Got killed. Yeah, killed himself. So, what's the use of having kalpataru, a desire tree, if our desires are bad? So we need, approaching the desire tree, we have to be careful what our desires are. We have to probably modify our desires, purify our desires. And then when we approach Krishna, who is the supreme fulfiller of all desires, then we'll get benefit. We won't destroy ourselves. Okay, so I'll stop. Are there any questions or comments?
Yes. We're reading about the Medas yesterday. I was just reading the fifth panel about how the Medas are also like the horses at the sun god's chariot. So, have you heard anything about that?
The sun god, no, I don't know how to explain it exactly. The sun god has connection with the Vedas. He's one of the great teachers of the Vedas. So it's not that they originally are his horses, but they also appear as his horses because of his connection with the Vedas. Because one of the great teachers or promulgators of Vedic knowledge. So therefore the Vedic meters? Is it meters you said?
Yeah.
They agree to appear, to expand themselves in the form of his horses. The Veda, you know, just like a demigod can appear in various forms. So these Vedic meters expanded themselves to appear in this additional form of those horses. But that's an expansion of the original form of those meters.
The other thing is, it seems like from the fifth canon that certain demigods like Yamaraj and Brahma, that they're having like many different abodes. Like, you know, Yamaraj has got his place of Avaloka, and then he's also got a place at Manasaltara Mountain.
Yes.
And Brahma's got one on top of Mount Meru, and also
yes.
Pushkadri, there's his lotus there, and then there's Satchaloka as well.
Yes.
So, how do you
I think the abode of Brahma on top of Mount Meru is Satyaloka, if I'm not wrong. I think they're identical. Person who has adequate resources can own more than one house. Yeah, so they have multiple abodes. They have devotees or, you know, followers who live in different places, different parts of the universe. Lord Shiva has many followers. Some on the earth, some in the lower planets, some up at the top of the universe. So he has his offices in various places to deal with his clients who are located in different places. Demigods have that power, that ability to expand themselves into different forms, and therefore for each form they have a different location, a different abode.
Yeah, it's interesting that there's only prescribed to described that golden lotus was there and the seed of Lord Brahma.
But that's not the original. That's a replica or an expansion of the original. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I don't think Pushkara Dweep is the location, you know, where the lotus stem comes out of the navel of Mahavishnu. I don't think so. That's actually Satyaloka. The top of that lotus stem is the original abode of Brahma within this universe. And this Pushkara Dweep lotus is just Brahma's local office, branch office, you know, within the Borloka system. But it's his paraphernalia, parikara. You know, he has a lotus, a golden lotus, so he can bring one with him wherever he goes.
Yeah. And sometimes you get the picture that the other planetary systems are in the stem of the lotus flower.
That is the stem of the lotus is the universal form. So in their dormant form, they're present there, but when they're manifested outside. And they're unmanifest. The blueprints of everything in the material world, the species of life and the different locations, planets, are all contained within the lotus stem because that's the universal form. So it's like that's the hard drive. All the programs are stored on the hard drive. But when you actually run a program, it's running in a different section of memory. So the actual manifestations of all these things that are in the lotus stem, they're outside the lotus stem, scattered throughout the universe. It's the original forms. You know, the actual stored program that's contained in the lotus stem. But the manifestations are always outside, or copies running on the outside. Like a program is taken off the hard drive and run in volatile memory. Yes. The plan, the original, is in the lotus stem, but it's always a copy that's actually manifest.
Okay. How did you come to that understanding? I'm just wondering, where is that?
It's described in the Bhagavatam how the universal form is all the prototypes are what contain the universe. The universal form is samashti. It's not individual. There's nothing individual manifest in the universal form. It's all samashti. It's all prototypes. The individual, vyashti, individual manifestations. Like, what's contained, the brahmana who's contained in the universal form is not any particular brahmana. It's just brahmanhood, the abstraction, or the model of a brahman. Is contained in the universal form. But all the actual Brahmins live elsewhere. Yeah, some of them in this place, some of them in that place. They're the copies or the individual manifestations of the prototype. That's all described in Bhagavatam and elsewhere. Many Shastras describe that function of the universal form.
Does Mount Meru have anything to do with the lotus thing?
No, but it's. I don't think so. Mahavishnu is lying on the bottom half of the universe. Garbhadaksha Vishnu, rather, is lying on the bottom half of the universe. All of this other Mount Meru and everything is up on the higher, the upper part. Mm. Bottom part is all just garbha water. Mm. So everything else is manifested above that, including Mount Meru.
Right.
So no, I don't think they're not equivalent, not the same.
Maybe we have a technical question. When you get the understanding of the different levels, and you got like Ananta Devs holding up the planets just above Gobodok. But is that all within the lotus stem, because You get the lotus stem coming out of the navel.
No, again, the actual planets are outside.
Right.
The plans of the planets are inside the lotus stem. But when Brahma manifests the planets, he's manifesting them within the shell of the universe, somewhere in, the different planets are scattered throughout the universe. They're not all inside the lotus stem. They're vyakti, they're individual manifestations, even of planets. Okay? Yeah.
So it was mentioned celebrating hymns, Bhur, Bhuvah, Svaha. And do they include, just some hymns or just only one word?
They're just seed mantras. They're mantras. So Prabhupada is translating the word mantra into hymn. But a mantra can be one syllable. Bija mantra is just one single syllable. Om is the first one. So it's also considered a mantra. It's not a rule that a mantra has to be a complete sentence. It can be a single syllable. This is not even a word, necessarily a word with particular meaning. Om, you can say it's a manifestation of the Supreme. But what is the dictionary meaning of Om? Just that it's a manifestation of the Supreme. But it's not a word that has a meaning. Bhur Bhuvah Svaha, they have meanings. But some mantras, like Om, or Shraum, or other seed mantras, don't have any meaning. Still, they're mantras. Doesn't even have to be a word that has a meaning. Certainly doesn't have to be a complete sentence. Your grammar teacher in the gymnasium may not like that. That you're expressing yourself in incomplete sentences. But the Vedas are allowed to do that. Okay? Hare Krishna. Yeah?
I know how Lord Dakshaya Vishnu is lying on Ananta Shesh.
Yes?
Is that same Ananta Shesh that he's holding on the planets, or is it a different expansion?
The Ananta Shesha who's... Hare Krishna. There are different expansions of Ananta Shesha. There's one in Patala Loka, in the bottom of the universe. But I think the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu bed is also holding the universes on his hoods. That's the same. And holding the planets on his head.
So that's the same. That you consider that the same.
I think so, yes. Because I think there are descriptions of that same person being both, performing both functions. But the same Ananta Shesha is described as being both the bed of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and simultaneously holding the planets on his head. So if you follow that description, then they're the same. But there are elsewhere descriptions that there are further other expansions of Ananta Shesha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What about the lake? We say the Gobadak Ocean, but then there's also the lake that's inside Gobadak Shai Vishnu's navel, which is also Gobadak.
Well, I don't know if that's anything particular. That's just a portion of the Gobadak Ocean. I mean, he's lying, his whole body is lying on top of the ocean.
Right.
So, it's called a lake, but I think that's just metaphorical anyway. Lotuses grow out of lakes. So this lotus is not an ordinary lotus. It's a funny lotus that's growing out of somebody's navel. But because lotuses are supposed to grow out of lakes, that navel is called a lake also. But that's just metaphorical. Okay? I don't know of any place where there is identified, that this is some special lake that has some special function. I never heard of it. It's just a metaphor, a poetic description.
When we hear the length of Bhumandala, that means the length of the entire universe?
No, Bhumandala is a certain portion of the universe. Although it expands horizontally all the way across the universe, vertically it's just one small cross section.
Right.
So no, it's just, it does in this direction, it does go almost to the edge of the universe, Purloka. But it's like a flat section. Okay, so it's not the whole thing. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Hare Krishna.